populated area of Gaza. Will Hamas yield on the issue? Unlikely. Will Netanyahu? Don't bet on it. As a commentator for Haaretz put it, Netanyahu's long-standing aims are a holy trinity: maintain the occupation, stay in power, and undermine the Israeli left. So far, in spite of enormous public outcries for him to resign, he's on course. I'm Mel Gertoff for The Global Citizen. Thanks for listening.
You are listening to a fall membership drive edition of the KBOO Evening News for Tuesday, September 10th, 2024. This is a volunteer-produced newscast, and we encourage your participation. Call or text us with your breaking news, stories, and tips at 971-245-2158. Our production team for tonight's newscast includes Zachary Jones-Naray and Mel Gertov. The producer is Althea Billings, and our engineer is Otto. Special thanks to Eric Tegadoff, Antonia Gonzalez, Catherine Carley, Suzanne Potter, Eric Galatis, and Alex Gonzalez. The director of Evening News is Althea Billings. A podcast of this newscast is available on our website at kboo.fm/eveningnews. You are listening to KBOO Portland on 90.7 FM, K282BH Philomath on 104.3 FM, and K220HR Hood River on 91.9 FM. I'm Althea Billings. All of our KBOO programs, including the Evening News, are supported by our members, wonderful folks like you. KBOO is currently in our fall membership drive, so now is a great time to join. If you would like to become a member and support our programming, you can go to kboo.fm/give or text KBOO to 44321. Stay tuned now for KBOO News in depth.
KBOO News in Depth, where we take a deeper look at the top news stories impacting our community.
And if you're just tuning in, you're listening to KBOO Portland. My name is Zachary Jones-Naray, and I had the chance to speak to Jamie Dunphy. Born and raised in Portland, Oregon, the chair of the Music Policy Council under Music Portland's board of directors spoke to me about his campaign against Live Nation, the world-leading live entertainment company, and its threat to the DIY music scene right here. If it is under a bridge, in my opinion, then you're not really seeing the real show.
Troll core,
completely. So, along the conversations of bridges and one of the many iconic symbols of Portland, whether it's one of the 12 that we happen to have, Portland has a reputation of a very well-developed, rich DIY scene. You know, whether it's from its roots in punk, grunge, indie rock, and pretty much every genre that you can think of, we have a real identity in the scene itself. And I wonder, for those who may not have been able to witness this scene, what's so special about Portland to you, and how would you describe it to the newcomers of this city, maybe?
Yeah, you know, I grew up as a musician in this city. I spent my 20s in the back of a smelly van with my friends. I had a real effort to make a go of it. Portland used to be in a really affordable city. It used to be a city where you could work 20 hours a week as a barista and afford your rent. And because it rained 9 months of the year, you just grabbed a guitar and you were inside all day and you figured it out. And so everybody had a band. Everybody was doing their own thing. We had, for decades, we've had vibrant, interesting, artistic, creative, and innovative different expressions of music. We're not a single genre town. We've never been able to be pigeonholed. Our largest growing genre right now is the hip hop scene, which historically Portland has not been particularly welcoming to. But Portland used to be a jazz town. Portland has had a vibrant rock scene for a long time. We have an increasingly growing country scene. But Portland is not an affordable place to live anymore. And jobs are not paying what they should. And post-COVID, crowds have not come back the way they were. So we're facing a series of conflicting problems, all converging problems, all meeting in the same point where it is putting downward pressure on the infrastructure necessary for a vibrant independent music scene. It's putting pressure on the jobs that are created and supportive of the artists up on stage. And it is an opportunity for really opportunistic corporations to be able to sneak in and try to steal away something while they think nobody's looking.
So for the listeners that might not know what Music Portland is, could you give us an explanation of the organization's mission and its current campaign against Live Nation, what you were just talking about?
Absolutely. So Music Portland is a nonprofit trade organization focused on supporting Portland's independent music industry. We are an advocacy organization. We are a professional development organization. We are focused on the economics of supporting the music industry. For, in my opinion, people always often view music as part of the arts, and they view arts as a nice to have. They view it as a precious little thing that you can hold in your hands, and that it's always the first thing that gets cut whenever budgets are cut. Music Portland has made a very different argument. We knew that this is jobs, this is economic development, this is financial investment, this is community safety. Music is an enormous industry. And so what Music Portland actually did is we got the state of Oregon to recognize commercial music and live performance as emerging economic industries, and they did statewide economic impact studies of this. And we discovered that music industry in Oregon is almost $3.8 billion a year. It employs more people, it generates more income, and it pays more in taxes than salmon, than cannabis, and then timber. And 80% of that is in Portland proper. This is a $3 billion industry in Portland alone. And compared to the nonprofit arts, there was a big report out from the Americans for the Nonprofit Arts who announced that in Portland, all of the nonprofit arts combined are roughly $288 million a year. That means that the music industry alone is worth 10 times all other art in this city combined. We are the fourth largest music city in America. We're the last major music city without a Live Nation venue. And we're the only major music city that's doing it without any formal recognition from government. You know, the city of Austin is only the live music capital of the world because their city council voted to call it that. So we're fundamentally, our mission as Music Portland is to recognize and defend and strategically support the music industry. This is not about meaningless proclamations from elected officials saying how much they love music industry. This is about fixing the noise code so that cops can't shut down shows arbitrarily when a neighbor complains. This is about changing the zoning code so that when a triplex gets built behind a 100-year-old music venue, it's the responsibility of the triplex to install adequate insulation so that the new neighbors aren't insulted. This is about creating site-specific solutions for musicians, like expanding the musician loading zone program so that musicians can just pull in and offload their amp out of the back of their car rather than risking getting a ticket or parking a couple blocks away and having it stolen out of their back of their car. So these are really meaningful ways that we are trying to support the music industry from a policy level and also on an economic individual level with professional skills and trying to help musicians recognize that they themselves are small businesses. And that's why we ultimately have come to this campaign against Live Nation. Live Nation, for our listeners out there, Live Nation is the largest music promotion, tour, and artist agency in the world right now. They own venues, they own tour promotions, they own artist contracts, they own concessioners contracts. They own Ticketmaster. Ticketmaster owns StubHub and SeatGeek. They own all components of the artist music angle. And last year, they profited over $20 billion out of the music industry, an industry that is supposed to be struggling. Ticketmaster is the reason that your ticket prices double when you hit go purchase them for your Taylor Swift tickets. Live Nation has a long, long history of terrible business practices and anti-competitive behavior. And in fact, that behavior is so egregious that the U.S. Department of Justice and now 37 U.S. states have filed lawsuit against them. I'm personally surprised because, you know, when has the U.S. Department of Justice or the U.S. government ever seen a monopoly that they didn't love? This is that bad that we're all signing up to try and say that this company needs to be broken up. And at the same time, Prosper Portland, the city's economic development agency, is partnering with Beam Development and Colas Construction, two honestly great local companies who I've known for a long time, and I truly believe we're hoping to do something positive for the arts community in Portland. But they're partnering together with Live Nation, and this whole project is proposing a 3,500-person music venue in the Central East Side. We've spent 2 years trying to get some basic protections for the music industry from Live Nation and some basic guarantees that they're not going to do what they've done in every other city. So to date, they have ignored us. They have not agreed to anything. And so they actually went and applied for a conditional use permit to begin construction. And so because of the very clear track record of how Live Nation has carried themselves and the specifics about this project in the location of where it is, Music Portland has had to hire lawyers and challenge this permit. We are appealing this permit to Portland City Council, and we are leading a campaign citywide to try and raise awareness for the local industry to stand up and say that we're not going to welcome the Walmart of music into Portland.
It's completely accurate, and I think we're headed into a different era for what the music scene will look like. Outside of lawmakers, outside of nonprofit organizations and the musicians out there who are trying to spread the word, what can the average Portland listener do in their own free time to try to bring more awareness and, most of all, try to bring more action towards protecting this community that we all cherish so much?
Yeah, we need our voices to be heard, and we need it to be heard loudly by not just the folks who are directly involved, but the average person out there. So we have created a website, musicportland.org/livenation, where folks can go directly and with a few clicks of a button can send an email to every member of Portland City Council and the mayor. We need them to know that our voices are being heard, because we need to flood each of those inboxes and let this know that this is a political decision, that the city council is going to be the ones to make this choice. Additionally, we are actively crowdfunding the necessary money that is going to be required to hire these lawyers. In fact, the administrative appeal fee, not even before we've even made an argument in this hearing or had to hire our lawyers, it's almost a $7,000 fee just to appeal it. And so the nonprofit organization, Music Portland, is taking that on right now. So we need listeners to help us get access to small donors or to maybe some music industry folks who really care, who can help us front what we expect to be almost $20,000 in this campaign. Lastly is just to get involved, to read as much as they can, and to reach out and offer to volunteer. All of that is available with just a couple of clicks on our website. We try to make it as easy to get people involved, but there's a lot of passion here, and we want to put that to good use.
Towards that theme of passion, I think that's one of the greater themes that I've understood from the DIY scene, is that it's based off of this equilibrium of everyone putting in the work, being such a vital element of the house show scene, the DIY scene, and how that feels to people. How can we create this hybridized format where, yes, it's underground, but we're also being supported by real institutions who understand the cultural and symbolic value of having this music scene?
No, absolutely. Music is a spectrum, from the casual person who plays in their living room to the beginner who's up on stage for the first time at an open mic, to the careerist who's building their career all the way up to that professional level where you're just paying your rent full time. And we need every step in between. House shows, DIY shows, live concerts under the park, out in parks and under bridges, are all parts of that spectrum. We have gaps in that spectrum, and we also have gaps in how we support those spectrums. It's so much easier for government to understand, okay, this is a bar. That bar has a stage. That stage has a sound system. And that, therefore, we can get the liquor license, we can get the occupancy license, we can get the sound license. It's much harder for folks to understand the difference between a house concert and maybe something that is truly rowdy and out of place. But more than anything, we need consistent standards, and we need what's called a prescriptive path. We need a way for this to happen that is allowed, and we need to be able to explain it to the average person who wants to have a backyard barbecue, wants to have band practice in their space, and they want to do it in a way that is respectful to the neighbors, but is intentional and still allows for that art and culture and vibrancy to be part of the community. Music Portland is really strategic about these things. We have members of our board who are members of our organization who are also members of the Noise Review Board for the City of Portland. We have members who are on the Title 14 Noise Code Review Work Group and the Title 18 Noise Code Review Work Group. We are deep in the weeds, and we really are trying to make that fill that space in the advocacy realm so that we're really thinking about all of those options and holding elected officials accountable, because in my experience, the music industry is a lot like a herd of cats, herding cats. Every one of them doesn't see themselves necessarily as part of a broader scene. Maybe within the same genre, maybe within a specific industry, people see each other as aligned. But artists don't, or musicians don't hang out with each other sort of across genres. Music Portland's really trying to change that paradigm. This is part of it, is creating an intentional space where we can all be recognized as part of a broader thing, because truly we are stronger when we are independent together.
For those who have not been to an underground show, for those who are more used to the Moda Center than maybe the underground stage set up under, you know, Morrison or any other bridge, as we've said before, or some abandoned warehouse, the list goes on. But for those listeners, what would they be missing out on if this were to continue with Live Nation's movement in Portland? And I guess, what is the overall value of having this scene for any Portlander who might be interested or might not be?
Live Nation makes it harder for organic opportunities for this industry to grow. It makes it harder for, I mean, there are already immense real estate pressures. There are immense, you know, we are in a growing, dense urban community. The reality of what my experience when I was in my 20s trying to do pop-up shows at the back of bike shops along Foster, or some of these venues are now fancy sushi restaurants, or you know, the Ash Street Saloon is now a Bay's Fried Chicken. Like, the city that I grew up in is gone. It may be that what we know of as the DIY scene is not going to be able to move forward the way it has. Those industrial spaces are getting busier. We need to create intentional pathways for everybody to have that. What Live Nation does, though, is it reduces competition. It reduces opportunities for innovation. And what they explicitly do is they try to monopolize all of the components of an industry. You know, in every city that they've opened a music venue, independent music venues have either been sold or gone out of business. And it's not an accident. It's intentional. And like I said, we need that to exist as a spectrum. All of these tinier venues rely on the bigger venues in order to have that flow of artists go through. We rely on each other as part of an ecosystem. And if one part of that comes in and really actively disrupts that for intentional reasons, for money reasons, we lose that space for us to be able to have that artist who starts from the DIY scene, grows through the house scene, gets to the small stages, and gets up onto the main stage. It's really happening in every other community. Nashville, Austin, DC, all these places that had in huge vibrant music economies and a whole spectrum where people could develop their entire image, those artists are fleeing those places now. We have more performing musicians and more venues in Portland than we do in Nashville. And that's not because Portland's doing great. It's because Nashville is struggling. And honestly, what I'm hearing from the venue owners and artists that in Nashville is that Live Nation played an enormous component of that.
My last question is, what are some upcoming events and what do you want people to walk away from this conversation with, I guess, and how can they get involved if they wish to get involved?
Yeah. So two things. First of all, Music Portland always hosts a community event. It's normally first Monday, but this month, the first Monday of September is going to be Labor Day. So the first Tuesday this year, or this month, September 3rd, we're going to be having a community Q&A session and a bit of a public rally of trying to get some folks who are hearing about this, get them excited and get them involved. So we haven't yet aligned it on a location for where that's going to be. It's going to be in close proximity to where the proposed Live Nation venue will be in the Central East Side. But that's the first way that folks can get it. And they can learn more about that. It will be all the details once we finalize them, hopefully soon, will be on musicportland.org. If folks want to be kept involved in this, we have a mailing list and an opportunity for folks to get to volunteer or just to learn more about this, again, on our website. And so I would really recommend folks check out our website, musicportland.org/livenation. We have a whole timeline of what has happened dating back to 2018 with this whole situation with Live Nation and how I have specifically been involved. We have links to all the great media that we've been getting and great attention about this. And we have ways that folks can get immediately involved and activated and help truly let our voices be heard about this, because we need an all hands on deck approach.
Thank you for tuning into KBOO News. I'm your reporter, Zachary Jones Murray. And as always, it was a privilege and a pleasure. Till next time.
KBOO News In Depth, where we take a deeper look at the top news stories impacting our community.
You are listening to KBOO News In Depth. I'm Althea Billings. I'm here with Sandra Tutel from the Cascade Life Alliance, here to talk about organ donation and the work that this organization does. Welcome, Sandra.
Thank you. It's really nice to be here today.
Yeah, thank you for taking the time to speak with us. So let's get into it. What is Cascade Life Alliance for people who don't know?
I am the manager of the community outreach program, which is new for Cascade Life Alliance, and two outreach coordinators that have been working with me to develop this program. We are going out to the communities. We've been to like Juneteenth, Oregon, the Delta Park powwow, the Blues Fest. We just go into a lot of community events in order to do organ, tissue, and eye donation education. We're also, as a result of a state law that goes into effect academic year 2025, are preparing a new, very engaging, inspiring high school curriculum. So there was a 16-year-old girl, her name was Nisha, and she met with Representative Rayfield out of Corvallis, yes, and she just gave him a presentation and talked about the need for organ, eye, and tissue donation to be provided to high school students before they actually go to the driver's to the DMV to get their driver's license when they're asked that question, you know, do you want to be an organ donor? And so he was so impressed with what she presented, and he worked with some others, and they created House Bill 3234, which states that in academic year 2025, that organ, eye, and tissue donation will be required at all Oregon high schools, usually in a health class, which would occur their first or second year of school. And so this would be before they go to the DMV. So out of that, we wanted to just really make sure that they had the proper information, that they had all the resources they need. And when I say they, I mean the teachers that are now tasked with providing this education. And then also, if they wanted someone to come into their school to do the presentation themselves, you know, that was an option. So we're currently working on putting this, you know, we're trying to build a curriculum, like I said, that is engaging, inspiring, but also like relevant to a high school student, and hopefully so they can see themselves in this situation, either having to make a decision themselves, or, you know, if they ever, you know, God forbid, do need a transplant. So we're putting this curriculum together. This will be available. We'll offer it this year.
Okay.
And just kind of, you know, find any things that need to be changed, any tweaks to the program. And if they can go online, they can fill out a form that will either request an in-person or a virtual presenter. Yes, the teachers can.
Nice.
And then, or give them all of the curriculum and all of the tools and resources they need themselves to teach it themselves. So they'll have these options, and then answer any questions. And so right now we're in the process of putting postcards together that will get sent out to all the high schools to give them this information and where they need to go. And we're also, you know, doing emails, and then even, you know, some schools that we're going to try to make sure we get into, you know, in our first year. So we'll be doing some phone calls. So we're really busy right now putting this all together, and hopefully providing just something that really speaks to these students, and that they'll, you know, that they'll take away and go home and talk to their families about it. And because a lot of times, you know, they don't, you know, what you might learn in school, you're not bringing home. But this is a conversation for the entire family, not just for the student themselves.
I wanted to ask about that point, though, talking about it having relevancy to high school students. What is some of the thinking about what specifically makes it relevant to high school students, and thinking about that in the curriculum?
Right. Well, most people that are registered donors are registered through the DMV. So that is where the majority of people will be asked that question and take that opportunity to become a registered donor. So we want to make sure that you have all the information beforehand, and answer any, you know, if there's any misconceptions or confusion, and just make sure they really understand what they're being asked. And our job is not to push them, you know, pressure them into signing up, but just making sure they have all the information they need to make an informed choice on that.
Yeah.
And so the reason for high school is because of really the age of getting your driver's license and going in. But you can register in a variety of ways. You can register on your iPhone health app. There's registerme.org. But most people do register through the DMV.
Yeah. Is there, when thinking about organ donation and matching folks up with a potential donor, is age a factor in that?
No, there's a lot of criteria in matching the organ donor to the recipient, but age is not. So we just had a 98-year-old man that donated his liver and was placed a 72-year-old woman who was doing quite well. So a lot of times people feel like they're too old, or, you know, they've had a hard life and that nobody would want, you know, their organs. But the reality is anyone can register to be a donor. And you would be really surprised who actually, you know, can qualify to donate their organs. And if it's not organs, it's corneas and tissue. This enhances the lives of hundreds of people. You know, it's an organ donor can save the lives up to 8 people, but you can also, improve the health of hundreds of people through tissue and cornea donation. So a person should just, you know, realize that regardless of their age or health conditions, that there is a likelihood that they can, leave the legacy of a donation, be it organ or tissue.
Yeah. Well, what are some of the statistics? Like, how many people are signed up for this kind of thing in Oregon?
Yeah. So in the state of Oregon, we have over 3 million registered donors, which seems like a huge amount, right? So in the country, there are over 100,000 people on the transplant waiting list. So it seems like with those kind of numbers, this shouldn't be a problem. But it is actually very difficult to be an organ donor. It's an incredibly complex process. Mm-hmm. And so the likelihood of being an organ donor is pretty low. So that's why you need to have such huge numbers of people registered to be donors. Right now, with the waiting list, about 60% of the transplant waiting list are people from communities of color, and about 30% of registered donors are from the same communities of color. And this is really important to address this, because the matching of an organ donor with a recipient is much improved when they are from the same race. And so when you have better matching, you have better outcomes. And you have, you know, better transplant outcomes, and you have longer lasting grafts, which of course is very important. And so we're just really trying. August is the National Multi-Ethnic Donor Awareness Month, and it's a really great opportunity to talk about these numbers and actually why these numbers exist. You know, people from communities of color often have higher numbers of health conditions such as diabetes, heart disease, high blood pressure. And these conditions did not come out of nowhere. There's reasons for these health conditions, and it can be years of discrimination, inadequate access, and discriminatory healthcare policies. And so we want to have those honest conversations and talk about that, and talk about why that need is so large, and also address that need. And that's by increasing the number of registered donors is going to increase the likelihood of receiving a transplant from somebody of the same race, and which has proven to have better outcomes.
Yeah. So is that work that Cascade Life Alliance is doing in Oregon to try to get more Oregonians of color to consider becoming an organ donor?
Absolutely. That's why we're out at these community events. We are volunteering with organizations. We are happy to speak at any events or organizational meetings at that if anybody has interest in this, where the curriculum that we're putting together in high schools addresses this. We're just trying to provide a lot of resources and information, and just have those difficult but, you know, real conversations about this. I mean, my family is Native American. My mom was born and raised on a reservation and didn't have the best relationships or best experiences with healthcare providers on the reservation. And so when I was a child, she told me not to be an organ donor. She told me that they would let me die on the table and give my organs to white people. And that was, you know, that's what I was heard as a child. And I believe that. Now, obviously, a lot of years have gone by. I know that to not be true. My mom knows that not to be true. We are both registered donors. And oddly enough, here I am working in donation education. So, but she had good reason to have those feelings and those views. And but with the learning, you know, more about it and understanding that, your healthcare team, if you're brought into an emergency room, a life-changing event, and that entire team is going to do everything they can to save your lives. They are completely unaware of your organ donation status. It's, you know, there's no thought of organ donation until every measure has been taken to save that patient's life before it's, and a referral is even made to Cascade Life Alliance. So these are two different teams. And, you know, there's just every, like I said, every measure will always be taken to save a patient's lives before organ donation would ever be considered. Mm-hmm. But anyway, back with, you know, to my mom, give, you know, having this information and just learning more has changed, you know, how she sees it and obviously how I look at organ donation.
If listeners are interested in finding out more information, what do you recommend?
So if you want to register to be a donor, if you want to get right to that, you can go to registerme.org. You can go to your DMV, have that added to your driver's license. You can go to our website, which is cascadelifealliance.org. And on every page, there's a button to be a registered donor. If you want to learn more about the high school curriculum that we're developing or the community outreach events that we're attending, if you want to request a speaker, you go to cascadelifealliance.org/outreach, and all of our contact information is on there.
Very cool. Well, Sandra, thank you so much for taking the time to talk with us today.
I appreciate it.
Sylvester the Boogie Cat. You're listening to KBOO Portland 90.7 FM Community Radio.
The leaves are falling.